Hi, Matt here. Before we get started, two quick opportunities for us to interact. This Thursday, February 26th at 8 a.m. Pacific, I'm hosting an AMA, Ask Matt Anything, in our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community. I'd love to see you there. And also, don't forget to take advantage of our Valentine's Day free Coach Matt AI offering. Join our learning community at fastersmarter.io/learning. Now, a word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you quality content free of charge. Hi, Matt here. I recently have done some international travel, and I'm always amazed when people can speak the language of the country they're visiting. So for my upcoming trip, I'll be using Babbel, my go-to app for science-backed language learning. Babbel lets me practice real-life conversation, step-by-step, without the stress. It helps me build the confidence to speak up when it matters, from ordering a coffee or chatting with new friends. However you learn best, by listening, speaking, reading, or writing, Babbel adapts to your style and keeps you motivated with personalized learning plans, real-time feedback, and progress tracking. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 55% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/TFTS to get up to 55% off. Rules and restrictions may apply. The game of life and the game of business can be quite challenging and difficult at times. But with clear intent, strong relationships, and a fair amount of practice, we can be successful. My name is Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Today, I'm really excited to speak with Andrew Luck. Andrew is a former NFL quarterback known for his exceptional leadership and strategic thinking on the field. Andrew is also a Stanford graduate with an undergraduate degree in architectural design and recently a master's degree in education. As quarterback for Stanford, Andrew led his team to multiple victories, and he continued this trend while playing professionally for the Indianapolis Colts, where he earned 4 Pro Bowl selections and the 2018 NFL Comeback Player of the Year Award. Andrew, thank you for joining us. It is a true pleasure to chat with you. I've watched many of your games here at Stanford and certainly on TV many, many more. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Should we get started?
Please.
Excellent. As a quarterback, clear communication is crucial with your teammates, your coaches, the press, and your fans. Are there specific strategies and tactics you found help you communicate more effectively with clarity and accuracy when you're in those high-stress situations?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think communicating with fans or the media is a lot different than communicating with teammates in game, which is a lot different than communicating with coaches when you're in the room during the week preparing for a big game. So with teammates, I think I learned clarity was really important. It was as much nonverbal as verbal. Walking in a professional locker room, I had to earn veterans' respect so they would listen to me. I mean, that was a simple equation in my mind. So I got to go build some equity. I got to show up every day. I have to show guys I'm holding up my end of the bargain so that when I ask you to, that you feel like there's a respect there. So I very much believed in that with my teammates. And the media was another interesting part. Difficult, certainly, to speak to the media 2 or 3 or 4 times a week. But I think also there's a level of accountability that you just have to eventually own when you speak publicly about your performance, your team's performance. I always felt that I needed to keep things about myself. I mean, pointing fingers was not going to be a good thing, especially not towards teammates, and try to be as authentic as possible. And I certainly didn't do it perfectly. But getting up there and not lying, it also helps.
Yes. So something you said there that I think is really important for all of us to think about, the notion of establishing the equity that you have, and that's work you have to do right away. And in some cases, we can do that ahead of time in terms of how we set expectations for the meetings that we have or the conversations. But really, many of us go into these high-stress situations thinking about what we want to say, not necessarily about the relationship we need to build in advance of it. And I think that's really an important point.
It's part of why I love team sports.
Yeah.
The relationship is at the core of locker room culture,
right,
of going out there together. You internalize that very early on when you play team sports. I can't succeed without you. You can't succeed without me. We've got to put the work in.
One of the things that I've always admired when I've watched you play is you seem to stay very calm. many of us find ourselves in situations in our lives, our careers, where it's really intense around us. What do you do to stay calm? How do you center yourself?
Yeah,
in that,
that's interesting that your observations, I stay calm. There, I can certainly look back and think of times I did not feel very calm come off the sidelines and throw a helmet down in frustration or let some emotion out. And I think one, as a player, I learned that it was okay to play emotionally. I enjoyed, that's part of what made sports fun, the highs and the lows. Now, when you walk in the huddle and call a play, you've got to sort of become a clinician. It is business. You're on it. And the only way I learned to do that was to practice that. And I had fantastic coaches, starting with my dad in Pop Warner football, Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw at Stanford. I had amazing coaches in the NFL. And we practiced those high-pressure situations all the time. I think there's a romantic notion I held growing up, you know, that you rise to the occasion, you rise to these great moments. But I think you settle to the level of your training. I really internalized that at Stanford with how we practiced. I mean, practice had a sense of urgency, had pressure. There were stakes at practice. I mean, there was competitive. We learned to compete against each other. We learned the at least as a quarterback, I learned the physiological response. Can I control my breathing to call a play clearly, succinctly, with some level of positive affect to my teammates so we have a collective belief we can go and get this fourth down or score a touchdown here. So I think practicing that and having some awareness of that this is what we're practicing for helped my growth, helped my career.
A lot of us think of practice as something that's a nice thing to do if we have the time, but don't purposefully do it. I mean, if I've got a high stakes meeting where I'm trying to sell or present something, maybe it makes sense to practice with somebody and get some feedback. My hunch is you've spent many, many more hours in practice than you have in the actual game.
Absolutely. And frankly, I'm 5 years out or so now for play. I miss practice.
Oh, interesting.
Practice was fun. It was like a mini game. There's a great line from Marvin Harrison, a wide receiver, Hall of Famer, who I didn't play with, but he was on the Colts, through sort of my fandom of middle school, high school. And he said, I get paid to practice. I'd play a game for free, right? And I love that. And when I think of the great quarterbacks that I grew up watching, like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, I mean, you hear stories about their intensity of practice. And I wanted to embody that as well.
That notion of being paid to practice is an interesting one. I think if all of us think about our jobs, the performance aspect, but it's really the pre-work where we're earning our money and earning our keep. You've been praised for your leadership both on and off the field. How would you describe your leadership style, and what are some important qualities you see in effective leaders?
Certainly when you play the quarterback position, and this starts from Pop Warner football, I mean, eyes are on you. So you are given a leadership role.
Right.
There's no way around it. Calling plays, you're telling people what to do. But it's not just enough to be given that role. You have to earn it. I always thought I had to be the best teammate I could be before being a decent leader. I had to learn to... Hey, you can't avoid certain levels of conflict. And yeah, you can come out the other side and both parties can be better. I was profoundly impacted by my college coaches, Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw. And something Jim Harbaugh really, really helped me with was he empowered the quarterback. And he empowered the quarterback to have their own personality. I felt like I could go play with my personality, and it didn't have to be a mirror image of what Jim Harbaugh was. So that had a profound impact on me. Yeah, that's what I think about when I think of young quarterbacks, and I volunteer coach in high school of making sure I'm not stamping my ego on who I think they should be, but empowering them.
I have to admit, I find it a little surprising that somebody who plays a highly competitive, combative game, if you will, was conflict averse. Tell me a little bit more about that. And I'm very, because I also am conflict averse, but I didn't play professional football. How did you manage that? How did you learn to lean into that?
Part of what was fun about playing contact sports for me, like football or basketball and getting down there, was that I didn't have to be nice. Per se, it was okay to step on toes. It was okay to get there. It's okay to bring a level of intensity. So I do think sports helped me sort of identify, conflict averse a little. And you can work on it and you can grow on it. And you have to. I mean, you have to when you're on a team.
You found, as somebody who is conflict averse, playing sports allowed you to actually explore being in conflict and seeing positive results. Maybe there's some other areas of our lives where we can practice that, get more comfortable.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Because we film everything now, because we have phones out, practice really needs to be a psychologically safe and physically safe space because you try stuff.
Right.
And you fail. you look stupid.
I see this personally in the work I do. I teach communication skills, and I'm encouraging people to try new things to see what works and what doesn't. I like to joke that my class is like a high school chemistry class, where sometimes the experiments blow up and sometimes they don't, and you learn in either case.
Absolutely.
And you have to have that environment. Your decision to retire from the NFL in 2019 surprised a lot of fans and players alike. What was your thought process on how to communicate that? What was that process like?
I did not seal myself off in a vacuum. My girlfriend, now wife, was very much involved. My family, my inner circle. And then when I decided to retire, we were going to have a press conference on a Sunday, and it wasn't going to be a celebratory press conference. Right? This wasn't like, you've won a bunch of Super Bowls and you're going off. But I knew I needed to write something down. So wrote some stuff down, but word leaked out during the Saturday night preseason game with about 7-8 minutes left to go. And so I felt, it was an odd feeling. I felt cameras turn to me, and I, ooh, something's not, this is out. Thankfully, you go back to teammates, Friday evening and Saturday morning, I had spent time reaching out to the 10 guys, 8 to 10 guys on the team that I'd played with for a long time and that I loved and respected and felt very much tethered to with friendship and kinship and all that. And we sat and shared in different guys in different ways and other guys in other ways. And some we had a little more time, some we didn't. One of my teammates was involved through the whole process, Sunu and others, and called some folks as well. But so when the news broke Saturday night, I was grateful for two things because it was a surprise. Grateful, one, that I had told my friends and teammates that I felt like they needed to know. Two, I was grateful I'd been working on this draft and sitting to the PR guy because I had a speech ready to go for the impromptu press conference at 11 p.m. on a Saturday night in a T-shirt. And then the lesson I learned is if the more people you tell, news like this gets out, especially in an industry like the NFL. I mean, that's sort of a little bit behind the curtain of what that process was like.
The decision sounds like it was very difficult to make, but it sounds like you did some things that were very wise. One, you spent some time thinking about it in advance in terms of what you might communicate, and you reached out to others. I'm hearing a theme across all your answers that it's about connection, it's about relying on others, it's about relationships, connecting with others. And I think that's really powerful, and a lot of us can think about that when we make career moves. Connecting with others we know, thinking about how we want to message it is really important. Congratulations are in order. You recently graduated with a master's degree in education. You came back to campus. What motivated you to return to education and return to Stanford? And share a little bit about what you studied and what maybe one or two takeaways you had.
I knew I wanted to challenge myself and learn. I certainly wanted to get back into an academic setting with cool people. I did spend a lot of time thinking about the role sports plays and how kids grow up in this country and how sports and K through 12 education intertwine, which in this country is a big deal. And I wanted to be around new people. You know, I'd been in locker rooms my whole life. I wanted to go see what class was like as a graduate student. And I needed my perspective to be challenged.
So share with us an idea or two that you now think of differently having matriculated through a graduate program.
One, I have learned not to rush to judgment unless I feel like I am the expert, but yet it's probably worth asking someone and do some research about things.
What do you see yourself doing?
Well, keep helping Stanford with projects. And, I think also the energy around college campuses is really fun. You get to learn from folks. There's interesting things going on. And
You are so right. I mean, part of the reason I love my job is just to be around really smart people engaging in really interesting ideas. As a coach, your job is to help your players be the best they can be at their sport, but also in their lives. How do you approach that dual task? And are there specific life lessons you try to inculcate in your students?
I think, one, it's fun to teach football. I think without being too explicit about the life lessons you learn, like showing up on time, showing up ready for practice. You need to do that to win the game, right? You need to practice with urgency. We talk about it. So some of those life lessons, communicating with players has been really interesting. Coaching is hard. I mean, shoot, coaching freshman football, I got nervous calling plays. You know, I played in conference championship games and bowl games, and I was nervous, calling plays for these guys. And I felt it physiologically, and I messed up, and, I shouldn't have called that. Sit down and, go through it. Okay, next time, learn from it. It's a lot of fun. You realize, too, you've got to let those kids be themselves. I view practice time and this time that they get on the field in the game time is almost sacred. They put their phones away. They're with each other for 2 hours, an hour and a half. They're struggling together. They're in conflict with each other. And a minute later, they're collaborating with each other. Like, it's a, you know, I think there are really powerful lessons that exist in there. And frankly, part of my, at least my personal challenge, is to start drawing those lessons out more.
As a father of two boys who played sports, there'd be times where you'd yell at the coach or say, that was a bad play. I just can't imagine a parent saying, Andrew Luck made the wrong play. But this notion of teaching life skills, especially to young boys, I mean, I think young people have challenges that I certainly never experienced today, but especially for young boys as they become young men, to really help them in the way that you're doing is so critical, because many of them are not going to go beyond high school sports, just the way that it works. And to learn those skills, camaraderie, timeliness, how to communicate, how to have conflict productively, how to collaborate, how to have a relationship with another person in a meaningful way.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. These sponsorships support the cost of making our show, allowing us to bring it to you free of charge. Hi, Matt here. Career coaching often comes through our workplaces, which can be a great starting point. But sometimes you want space to focus on your priorities, not your organization's. That's where Strawberry.me comes in. It's career coaching you choose for yourself. You answer a few quick questions, get matched with a vetted coach, and in many cases, you can start within 24 hours. You choose the coach, you decide the goal, and you get to talk honestly about what actually matters, whether that's a promotion, a pivot, burnout, or even leaving. There's no HR involved, no performance review lens, and if it's not the right fit, you can switch coaches. What I appreciate is the sense of agency. When you're feeling stuck, waiting rarely helps. If you've been thinking something needs to change, you don't need permission to explore that. Go to strawberry.me/TFTS. It's coaching focused on you. Think of it as therapy for your career.
Andrew, this has been a true pleasure to chat with you. Before we end, I'd like to ask three questions of everybody I interview. Two are similar, and then one I create just for you. Are you up for that?
Please.
You have always struck me as somebody who is very articulate. You communicate very efficiently, very effectively. Talk to me about where that came from. Is that something that existed in your family? Did you work on it? Is it just part of who you are? You communicate well. How did that come about?
I grew up in an amazing household with a mom and dad that, you know, imbued with love and books, fun and sports. And my father had somewhat of a public role growing up as a sports executive. And I mean, he played quarterback in the NFL, and so he would take me around, and we'd be in the car, and he'd call into a radio show to talk about the Houston Dynamo, who he was running at the time, or something else, or I'd go to charity events, and he was the MC. So you learn from watching my dad, especially in the public communication sector. And my mom is an incredibly empathic person, incredibly empathic woman, and there's a lot of care and a lot of tenderness from her. And so I learned a lot from both of them in separate ways. And when I think about training for a quarterback, like no pun intended, I got lucky. My dad, like the talking to the media, I as a kid growing up watching that. And when those commercials about you turn into your father, like, oh God,
I'm
turning into my dad when I hear myself talk. But so I'm grateful for both of them.
Let me ask you question number two. Who is a communicator that you admire and why, beyond your father?
Yeah, communicator that I admire. You know, I was going through a tough time with injuries during a spell of my NFL career, and my physical therapist ended up spending a lot of time with a Dutch man, someone from the Netherlands named Willem Kramer, and he was so direct. You know, and he was Dutch, so he was sort of a little bit of a meme about the Dutch and cut through the fluff and leave zero room for ambiguity. And I needed that at that time.
Uh-huh.
I did not like it often, but I needed to hear it. He helped me raise questions that I had about myself, and it was okay to answer them. And it was okay if I didn't have the perfect answer. It was a safe place, talking about psychologically safe space, direct communication, a listener. If he was wronged by me, he would share it. There was no sugarcoating it. And we celebrated victories together. You know, the full spectrum. And I really needed that at that point in my life.
You are the first person in our 150 guests to name a physical therapist. we get poets, we get presidents. That's great. And it sounds like the directness and doing what was needed in those moments is what led you to select him. Final question. What are the first three ingredients that go into a successful communication recipe?
First of all, respect.
Yeah.
Clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say reciprocity.
Okay.
Yeah.
So respect and clarity. Clearly, respect is a theme across many of the answers and ideas you shared. Clarity, I can imagine, as somebody who did the work that you did, being very clear. Reciprocity, listening, being receptive instead of, certainly makes a lot of sense. Often people see communication as a very directive thing, but I think to be a recipient and be in that moment and co-create something is really powerful. Andrew, this has been fantastic. Thank you for sharing your insights that come from a very different domain, but they directly apply to how we live our lives, how we manage our careers. It was a true pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for reminding us of the importance of relationships, the importance of connection, and the importance of practice.
Oh, my honor. This was incredible. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. To learn more about leadership and coaching, please listen to episode 153 with Tara Vandeveer. This episode was produced by Jenny Luna, Michael Riley, H. Ash, and me, Matt Abrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder, with thanks to Podium Podcast Company. Please find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram. And check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletter.
Hi, Matt here. I can't believe that this month is the 6-year anniversary of Think Fast, Talk Smart's launch. As we start the new year, we're excited to bring you even more ways to learn, practice, and grow your communication and career skills. We'll now be releasing 8 episodes a month, coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. For those of you who like to watch your podcasts, we are now posting full video versions of each episode on both Spotify and YouTube. We're moving to a weekly email that shares specifics about the current week's shows and previews what's coming in the future. If you're not subscribed yet, head to fastersmarter.io and hit subscribe. When you do, you'll also start getting our monthly newsletter. Fastersmarter.io is also the place to go for transcripts and show notes for each episode. And under the resources menu, you can find English language learning content for each episode. Speaking of languages, I'm excited to share that a Hindi version of the show is now available. You can get access to our extended Deep Thinks episodes and listen ad-free by subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or at fastersmarter.io/premium. I'd love for you to join us on our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community, where people from all over the globe are coming together to develop and hone their career and communication skills by taking asynchronous lessons, participating in learning quests, enjoying live author book talks, and getting individual guidance from my AI coach at fastersmarter.io/learning. Be sure to look at our social media channels for our video shorts, frameworks, infographics, and protocols. You can also help us by giving us a 5-star rating and positive review. 2026 is going to be a great year for becoming more confident, clear, and compelling in your communication and career. As always, thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.